welcome to episode 57 of Our Baseball Weekly, the weekly podcast from the baseball subreddit. My name is Lewis, and I think we're going to have a little shorter episode for you here today. It is me and Maz kicking it in the booth here Sunday evening. Both of us have the Sunday night game on in the background here for the NFL. And we're gonna get this knocked out and ready for you next week. Maz, who do we have coming on the podcast next week that we're both really excited about?
Oh boy, I'm really excited. I'm going to get to interview Dan Szymborski again this upcoming week. He is another one of the repeat people coming on this podcast. It was real great to have him last year. Always a very good interview. Always a fun guy to hang out and talk to. But yeah, Zips finished up this week. I believe the Texas Rangers was the last team that went up on Friday. So we're just going to sit down for a bit, talk about Zips, ask some more questions that we didn't get to last year. Talk about Juan Soto's gigantic WAR projection. Literally Ted Williams 2022. Yeah, that should be fun. So everybody stay tuned next week. But this week, what do we got going on, Lewis?
Well, it's just me and you. We're going to talk about a few things as we're running through here. We've got a couple retirements worth talking about, I guess. Some updates on some other things. Really, we'll see. I mean, the big thing, which we'll talk about we can start off with it. The big thing this week is that MLB and MLBPA are meeting today, if you're listening on Monday. And MLBPA is going to give their counter proposal on the economic issues. If by some miracle they like present it and MLB is like, great, let's do it. And the lockout ends, Dylan will win that part of the prediction contest because he has January 24th down as the day the lockout ends. I don't think things are looking very good for him. What do you think?
I don't think they are either. He actually had January 24th down as the day.
Yep.
Ooh, so he did his research. He figured out it was a Monday. Okay. Maybe they'll come to an agreement. Ooh, good on you, Dylan. But yeah, I don't think I'm not optimistic. It's kind of, you never accept the first offer. So, you know, MLBPA didn't accept the owner's first offer. I don't think the owners are going to accept MLBPA's first offer. I'm interested to see what it is, like what's different than what they have now, but I'm hopeful that it can get done soon. Just not, yeah, I don't think it's going to happen today or tomorrow or the other day, whenever you're listening to this, unfortunately.
Yeah. Unless you are listening, you know, weeks from now,
you might be.
Maybe you might be. Good for you for going back through our back catalog at that point. I am not feeling good about my February 1st prediction. It looks like you might win by default because you had the latest in February. So
yeah, what was mine, like third week of February or second week of February or
third
something?
Week? Yeah, it was pretty late. So
yeah, but maybe they can talk this week. You know, they're meeting in person for the first time. If anybody wants to give John Boy a head up that, you know, it's not just hundreds of players in one room. I don't know if anybody caught that drama over the week, but if you're following me on Twitter, you probably did. But yeah, so they are going to be meeting in person. You know, maybe they'll have a chance to like talk about it and get some work done if they're in the same room together. But yeah, I don't know. I'm a little optimistic, but I don't know if it's going to happen this week.
Yeah. The only thing I could see is that now this happened, it's in Marvin Miller's book. I can't remember which stoppage it was. It has been a case where the owners have instituted a lockout, but then lifted it, at spring training without a deal hashed out, but they just lifted the lockout. It would be interesting to see at that point if the owners do it as a kind of a PR stunt. Also, the owners, as we talked about last week and pretty much every week, the owners make money on spring training, the players don't.
Right.
So it might be interesting if the owners come out and say, we're happy with the progress that we've made. We're hoping we can hash it all out, and we're going to lift the lockout so the players can come play if they would like to while we work on the rest of the deal. And at that point, it would be kind of balls in the players' court, and they can either strike, or they can come to an agreement, or they can negotiate with no, they can continue to negotiate and play on with no deal in place. I don't know if MLBPA would be willing to do that.
I don't think
it has been gonna happen, but
I don't think A, it's gonna happen, and then B, yeah, that they would probably do that. I think it would be nice of the owners to do that. Like, okay, you know, you can use the facilities again, and, you know, you can come to spring training and work out and blah, blah, blah. It would be nice if they did that. But well, unfortunately, with billionaires, I think you kind of have to assume that they're going to operate in bad faith, and that that's not really going to happen. But it has happened in the past. It's not insane to suggest, though. Yeah.
It's not, you know, it... If you're not part of the book club and you're not reading Marvin Miller's book, you really should read it at some point. There's just some really great insight into just kind of player owner relationships and that whole side of the game of baseball. I mean, reading through his account of the first couple strikes is honestly hilarious. Talking about how his perception of where the owners were coming from and the sort of things that they were fighting over. I feel like the economic issues are bigger, but like, for instance, the 1981 strike ended up being over something. Like, when it came down to it, it was about the pension fund, and it was not anything really worth striking over, or like, not worth striking over. For the owners, worth fighting about it. Like, the pension was worth striking for.
Yeah.
But the owners were like, why did we, this is like, a couple of the owners afterwards looked at it and like, well, this was stupid. What? Why did we let you talk us into pushing them into this?
Yeah.
I mean, there were other core economic issues and stuff, but it's interesting. One other thing that's really interesting to look back at. Now, Marvin Miller wrote the book back in 1999 or 91, I believe. So it was before the 94 strike. In that book, he talked about in the owner's initial negotiations for free agency, he talked about how owners wanted a compensation player if one of their players signs with a different team.
Okay. So kind of like how we have now with the qualifying offer.
Yeah.
But for an actual player and not for a draft pick.
Yes, it was for an actual player at the time, but Marvin Miller said, this was insane to me that they would think the players would fall for this, because anytime you put that sort of value, you're going to drive down free agent prices. And Marvin Miller was writing about this in 1991, about stuff he knew about in the 70s when the owners were trying to pull this, and the players let the owners do it in the last couple CBAs. And like, it's kind of insane to me that, Marvin Miller knew that this would happen. And yet somehow the players still it happened. Like, what? So I know we've talked about a little bit in the past that the players kind of made their own grave with the last couple CBAs to some extent. So the hard part is getting that back. You know, once you give someone something, it's really hard to get it back. And that's the sort of thing that's really, I'm sure, at the core economic fight of this negotiation. So,
yeah. At the same time, though, it's like, man, like, the balance has gotten so far in like the owner's favor that it's just so out of whack, you know? But I don't know if they're going to want to give up some stuff that they have, you know. I don't know if they're going to want to give up some of that balance and make it a little bit more even, because it's so much in the owner's favor that it's just silly. But I don't know. I guess we'll see this week. I hope good things happen.
Yeah. I'm, So I'm worried. Partially what I'm worried about is I foresee the cable bubble bursting soon. And when the cable bubble bursts, then the MLB money bubble will burst. And if there's nothing in place to replace it very quickly, we might legitimately have the same thing the NHL had going on in the mid-2000s, where there were some owners that legitimately could not afford to run their team. If that were to happen, it's not right now. Owners are making money hand over fist. What I'm concerned about is if there are some owners that see that handwriting on the wall and want to make a move about it now, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I just want baseball back.
I'm sure some owners will see it. Steve Cohen sees it. He seems to see everything in the future, whether it's stocks, whether it's dealings. He kind of has a knack for that. I wonder why. But I'm sure some owners kind of see it.
Yeah, we'll see how that all ends up. But we've got some other stuff to talk about. One thing really quick, I want to give our trivia question for the week. I mentioned we had the football game on in the background here. And our trivia question today, it is a who said it. This is a former MLB manager who said this. Said, baseball, it ain't like football. You can't make up no trick plays. There was a former major league manager that said that. It ain't like football. You can't make up no trick plays.
Okay. You said it ain't like football. So I know there's kind of like a famous baseball quote about baseball is the best because you can't run out the clock. So that's where I thought you were going. And I was trying to remember who said that. I'm sure it's a different guy. I don't know. That's a good quote. Could be from any kind of era before the 60s, I would think. Football wasn't really super popular before then.
It definitely wasn't a Cap Adson quote or Harry Cartwright, like
or a Connie Mack quote or anything like that. So yeah, it gotta be somebody from the 70s, 80s, 90s, that said it. Probably 70s or 80s, I would think. I don't know. I don't know. I'm never good with these sort of trivia questions. So
we'll answer it later. Answer it a little later here.
Here we go.
Maz, what is your background in art history? Do you have any background in like art history, art appreciation?
I don't. I don't know art, but I know what I like is the quote that I'm always reminded of. Not really. I feel like I used to be artistic when I was a kid, but that's kind of like so many other things in my life just kind of died out with age.
Yeah.
But I think I know where you're going with this, and it's fascinating what's happening right now on our sub every day of the week.
Every day, yes. If somehow you have not, if you are a active member of the subreddit, I'm sure you have seen at least one of these user did it for the story, drawing Mike Trout every day until the lockout is over. Not only has it, not only has it captured the subreddit's attention, this has gotten picked up in national news now. ESPN ran the story with it. USA Today picked up on the story. It is becoming a cultural phenomenon. Mike Trout is following him on Instagram.
The man himself knows about it, as the ESPN article said.
That's right. And I'm feel like the thing I'm most impressed about is his growth as an artist from the beginning of this to the end so far. I don't know how much you've looked at it, but it's kind of amazing.
I've seen it nearly every day. And yeah, it's really interesting. The first couple are really rough. Especially like the third and the first and like the fourth are real. If you're looking at it right now, I hope you are. I'm sorry if you're not, but yeah, they're bad. Trust me. Then he got slowly better. And then he seems to get a little bit more like meme-y and weird with it, which his artistic style, he has a style now.
Yes.
You know, we're like 50 days into this. He definitely has established his artistic style, which I am very happy for him. And when he works within that style, it's actually pretty darn good, I gotta say.
Yes. And what is amusing to me is just the different subject matter, like the different mm-hmm. inspiration and how much people are really getting into this. And everything. I enjoyed his experimentation with shading on day 16 when Mike Trout was, I'm assuming that's Thor.
Thor,
the face
think,
is
yeah.
a little more unrecognizable.
His teammate might have a problem with that, but you know, it's whatever.
And like day 13 tried really hard. What I'm interested in on that one is the shading. Like it looks like he's backlit, but also front lit. I don't know. The shading's a little off. But I mean, then the memes just start coming. And I mean, him with Shohei Ohtani as Titanic, or yep. in The Shining, or as Shrek. It's just amusing. What has been your favorite of these?
You know, I'm simple. I like a good pun. I like a good Mike Trout. So these are all pretty good. When it comes to the pun one, I think I got to go day 11 might be my favorite, which is Mike Trout being caught by a trout in a Mike Trout uniform. So listen, I like a good little joke like that. Okay. Also, I like a whole lot day 38, which is him as David Bowie, which I believe was David Bowie's birthday the day that he posted it. So, or it might've been a day or before or after. So I like that he's, you know, topical with some of them just because, you know, I like David Bowie. So, hey,
well,
whatever.
Who doesn't like David Bowie?
He wins there. But yeah, it's really creative in all these different situations and everything. I like the John McClane one for Christmas as well for Die Hard, which is a Christmas movie.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I don't want these to end, especially just because I'm just interested in where he goes. Like, he's got to run out of stuff eventually, right?
I mean, there's limitless possibility. I mean,
yeah.
Look at these two different inspirations here. Very, very close. My personal favorite, day 37, which is the single ladies one with Shohei Ohtani and Albert Pujols mm-hmm. joining in on the dance. And I just realized they're all in heels in this picture.
They're all in heels and they all have hairy little legs.
That's right. It's so amusing. Compare that with day 30, which is Saturn devouring his children with Mike Trout with long hair eating Jose Altuve. Like it's amusing. It's a fun little thing to look forward to every day. And I just, you know, that little whimsy for the day is very nice.
Yeah. I'm very envious because like I said, I'm not really artistically challenged. I am artistically challenged. I'm sorry. But apparently so is he. So, you know, he didn't let him let it stop him. And come on, Mike Trout knows about it. I'm a huge Mike Trout fan. If I could do anything in my life, even just like a wave or like a ball toss or so, any kind of acknowledgement that Mike Trout knows I exist, I'd flip out. And this guy has Mike Trout following him on Instagram. So he wins. He wins, guys. Come on.
Yeah. Also, I just want to appreciate the dedication. Every day. Like, do you know how many of these crappy series people have tried where every day and then it just pitters
yeah,
out?
A random player every day until the lockout ends. A random jersey from my collection until the lockout ends. Although that one is still going, but how many jerseys did the guy have? I don't know. You can't have that many.
I mean, that seems really, I don't know. That's almost a flex at that point.
A random baseball card from my collection, which I could do, but just I'd be lazy and I'd forget about it after 10 days probably. But yeah, it's dedication, and apparently according to the ESPN article, like he takes like an hour out of his day, so it's not too much time. So hey, if he can remember it and if he could do it every day, good for him.
Yes, definitely. All right, let's get to some actual baseball news, because
yes, as opposed to Mike Trout news,
as opposed to Mike Trout news, or periphery not Mike Trout Mike Cotton. Yeah. All right. Some things that have happened. We've talked a little bit about this a couple weeks ago. I think I was talking with Phil or Shane about how the local business owners in Tampa were advocating for the Rays two-city plan. Now it is officially dead. The Rays will not be trying to split time between Montreal and Tampa in the next couple seasons.
Right. I think that was supposed to start 2023. Not this year. They infamously put up that sign during the postseason about, hey, we're moving soon. And they took it down. But yeah, I think it was supposed to start in 2023. I didn't really read any of the details on this. Did they say anything specific about why it got struck down or just, yeah, no, that's a dumb idea. And that was kind of it without saying it.
I don't think they went into too much detail over the why. My guess is, number one, it's a stupid idea. number two, I feel like getting things set in Montreal, like, I feel like the group in Montreal, getting a field to major league caliber takes time. It takes a lot of dedication. It takes a lot of work. And I'm not sure they were ready to do that for a half season. I mean, look how much trouble the Blue Jays had to go through to like get the Buffalo Stadium up to par and everything like that.
They had to put like different lights in. They had to put, did they end up putting like a Hawkeye to get StatTrak? Or not StatTrak.
I believe so.
Statcast there and everything. So they had to do that. I mean, this is a stadium that hasn't had a major league team in it since 2004, if they wanted to go to Olympic Stadium. They'd have to do all that kind of like refurbishing and everything there too, just for, 31 games a year. So it's, you know, at least with the Blue Jays, it was okay. You're going to be playing maybe your whole season here. They didn't, but you know, maybe.
And I'm also really interested. Bob Nightingale tweeted,
Force about it.
He tweeted out that MLB's expansion is currently targeting Nashville and Montreal. Who knows how much he actually knows. So congratulations, Portland and Charlotte, I guess. But
remember, Bauer and the Mets have a deal.
That's right.
Bob Nightingale. So
if that's what they're going for, maybe Montreal dropped out because, hey, we'd rather be planning for our own team at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've got some sort of handshake agreement or like not handshake, definitely not a handshake agreement. They definitely did not come to terms before anything was official, any sort of deal like that. I guess maybe it would be, the thought would be just branding wise, it would be better to bring in their own team, like fresh, rather than, you know, have fans excited for this one team and then, oh, just kidding, that team's gone now. We have a new team.
This team that's not really ours.
I think it'd be difficult to sell it. Like
it would be. I mean, you can look at some other stuff that it has worked in the NBA a handful of years ago. After Hurricane Katrina, the New Orleans Hornets moved to play a lot of their games in Oklahoma City. And they eventually got the Thunder. I believe it was 2 years later. I'm not sure. So you could definitely look at that. But that was a team playing all of its games at another place where they never had basketball before.
Yeah.
So I see the logic, but I think it's a different situation. I don't think it really holds up as well here.
Yeah. Also, I'm really interested. Nashville as an expansion prospect. That seems
really cool.
I guess that was not on my list. I was thinking somewhere out west more or Charlotte. But I mean, Nashville works.
They have a really good city. Anybody that I know that's been to Nashville talks about how much they love it. And they have the Nashville Predators, which mm-hmm. they have a really passionate fan base, even when they weren't as good. I know they were really good a couple years ago. They went to the Stanley Cup Finals at one point. So they had a really passionate fan base when they were good and when they were not so good as well. So cool city. I think it'd be a good idea to expand there. Yeah, but everybody feels like Charlotte is a big one as well. I don't know. It would be.
I've always thought Charlotte was a better choice. Just because it's bigger. The area around it is a little more developed. It's kind of a tech hub right now. And the other thing that I know it's weird to put two more teams on the East Coast Eastern time with Montreal and Charlotte, but that works out really nice that each league would have 8 teams in Eastern time and 8 teams or yeah, would have 16. Yeah. We'd have 8 teams in each league in Eastern time and 8 teams and
Western,
in Eastern time. And I just thought that would be like really nice for the schedule makers, for the East Coast fans. I mean, Central and West Coast, we're always going to be kind of screwed in any of these realignments because it'll end up being more games for us going back and forth to the West Coast. But
yeah, I don't know. The only reason that I'm not sold on Charlotte is just because I don't know if it would be a great city to hold another professional sports team. I mean, there was a point talking about the New Orleans Hornets again. There was a point where they were the Charlotte Hornets, of course, and then they left in 2002 to go to New Orleans. And then they even tried. So they left and then they even tried saying, okay, well, let's give you an expansion team. And they had the Charlotte Bobcats, who were notoriously horrible and not supported. You know, I don't know if A is because of B, but most likely, you know, when you don't have a good team, they don't really get supported.
Yeah.
So, and then they lost them as well. So I don't know. It doesn't seem like a city that can hold on to a team. And yeah, they brought back the Hornets in 2014, but yeah, I don't know. I'm not as thrilled for Charlotte as I am for Nashville.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, one thing I am interested in whenever the next expansion round happens, after the NHL has given Las Vegas and Seattle kind of sweetheart expansion deals, as far as the expansion draft goes, is this what expansion drafts are going to look like from now on? Or will it be same old, you know, get a few draft picks a few years early, you build up your expansion, you know, your minor league rosters first, and then you get a bunch of cast offs for your first season.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to see how a baseball expansion draft looks these days, especially because, yeah, like you said, Vegas was put in a great situation to get a competitive team in their first year. Obviously, they went to the Stanley Cup Finals. Yeah. The Kraken doesn't seem to be going as good for them, but I mean, they do have potential. They are not a bottom of the basement.
Yeah.
You know, they're not the Coyotes. They're not the Kings. They're not who else is bad. Yeah. Those guys. But yeah, so I'd love to see what a baseball expansion draft looks like right now, at least.
Yeah. That'd be an interesting thing. Might be an interesting thought experiment. But I'm interested in what rules MLB would have in place.
Hopefully baseball gets back soon. If not, maybe we do a mock expansion.
There we go.
Mock expansion, mock protection, all that kind of stuff. Could be fun.
That sounds like something new mods on the subreddit would be more than willing to head up, right?
Hopefully we don't get to that point, but you know, it's an idea.
All right. So Ray's two-city plan is retired. That's dead. We've got a couple of retirements of some people this week worth mentioning. The first one is Mr. Francisco Liriano, Rookie of the Year 2006 in my heart, even if Justin Verlander was really the one who won it. 14 seasons.
Who's still pitching, right?
Yeah. Okay. You know what? That has nothing to do with the Rookie of the Year voting.
That
Liriano
is true.
Had a full run under him in ERA because he's didn't get to start in quite as many games. Stupid, sexy Verlander. And it was funny. We were looking at that before the game. Jonathan Papelbon came in second in Rookie of the Year voting that year.
Yeah, with relievers. Yeah, Rookie of the Year almost.
Sub what? Like 0.92 ERA in 59 appearances. That's actually kind of impressive.
Yeah, we were looking at his stats a little bit before we came on. I could have sworn he won a Cy Young. I might have been confusing it with his non-Rookie of the Year. I might have been confusing it with one of Johan's Cy Youngs, but man, I could have sworn at one point, like both of them won a Cy Young or an award or something like that. But yeah, Liriano was really good. Him and Johan, that 1-2 in Minnesota, yes, for like 3 years before the Mets stole Johan. Sorry.
It was so beautiful, and we haven't really had anything like that since. It's just so depressing. Playoff wins are gone. High caliber pitching is gone.
Man. Yeah, Francisco was a heck of a player. You know, he had 14 seasons over 15 years, most of them with the Twins, 7 with the Twins, 5 with Pittsburgh. Was a 06 All-Star, and he won a World Series in 2017. So at least he's got a ring, which Johan doesn't have. So sadly. But yeah, he announced on Monday, you know, of course, we talked about John Lester and Melky Cabrera last week, and then we release and Francisco Liriano announces his retirement. So how, you know, you as a Twin fan, I guess I don't even have to ask, how will you remember Francisco Liriano? We'll probably have the same answer.
Well, I mean, I miss Liriano. One thing that always comes to mind is his no-hitter in 2011, which was considered by many the least impressive no-hitter in recent memory. He struck out 2 and walked 6.
I don't even remember it. So
he still no-hit the White Sox, and the Twins won 1-0. So on a Jason Kubel home run, there's a guy that people do not think about ever anymore, but Jason Kubel,
let's remember some guys. Oh boy.
Solo shot there. The Chicago White Sox roster 2011, that's some guys: Juan Pierre, Adam Dunn, Paul Konerko, Alex Rios, Carlos Quinton, AJ Pierzynski, who we were talking about last week. These are some guys.
Definitely. That's a powerhouse lineup right there. Oh,
and
boy.
Liriano no hit him. But yeah, I do remember watching a game where he was effectively wild and sometimes ineffectively wild. I distinctly remember watching a game where I was thinking, oh my gosh, this might be his next no hitter. And he gave up. I thought he was going to lose in a no hit bid because he like walked the bases loaded and then like gave up a couple sack flies, and the Twins were down 2-0, and Liriano had a no going into like the fifth inning or something. And it was crazy like that. But always remember Liriano for those random hot streaks. Probably had one of the highest ceilings of anyone I've gotten to see pitch. He just never was able to put it together for very long. He hasn't pitched since 2019, so I guess this retirement isn't out of the blue. I'm gonna miss seeing him cycle through everyone else, seeing if he can put it together.
Yeah, good guy, lefty pitcher, right, I believe. So good for him. I always remember watching him and just thinking, man, the Twins have Johan, they got Liriano. This is a 1-2 punch that's going to carry them for years. And then I got to see a lot more of Johan. And then, yeah, Liriano just couldn't hold it together, unfortunately. Oh, well. But like we said last week to the others, happy retirement to him, of course.
Yes. And you deserve then it. One retirement I thought was bore mentioning: the wonderful Vladimir Ballantyn, Karakin hero, and Nippon Professional Baseball single season home run king, is hanging up his cleats after a number of years over in Japan. He only played in three MLB seasons. None of them were a full season. He played
none of them games. Are any good either.
he had a OPS of 2.5 in 2007 in three games with the Mariners, where he had a home run, a double in three at bats. So he was pretty good.
Good stretch.
Not very good his other two seasons.
Like you mentioned, he's the NPB single season home run champion.
Yes.
Apparently he hit 60 home runs, yep, which is a very good number. Some would say it's still, you know, one below the Major League Baseball record, but, you know, they'd be wrong. He did that in 2013 for Tokyo's Yakult Swallows.
That's right.
Love those NPB and Japan baseball names. But yep, the Yakult Swallows. Played for them for 9 years, apparently. So yeah, good. Again, happy retirement to him.
Yes, he took the legendary Sudaro O's record, and that was they were not happy about a foreigner coming and taking the record. It's interesting. For years, if anyone that was foreign born got close to that record, they stopped giving him balls to hit. That was something teams would do. And it wasn't exactly subtle. The Hawks, a pitching coach was once quoted as saying, "I just didn't want a foreign player to break O's record." When Carl Rhodes got close in 2001.
That's funny. There was actually a post on the subreddit this week about Sadohara O and yes, his all 800th home run. And they were talking about how when he was a manager and, you know, he wouldn't pitch to foreign born players when they were getting close to his record. It's a weird situation, especially for when he was managing, because he denies it. There was somebody in the comments of that was kind of defending O's actions and saying, okay, it wasn't intentional, it wasn't racism, it was, you know, this, that, your thing. And it was a good post, you know, and I always thought it was just kind of like racism as well. And maybe it is sometimes, but it seems like for O's specific situations, it wasn't, if you want to believe this guy, cited his sources. So I don't know, but yeah, it's such a weird situation.
Well, this is something that I've just found interesting. I remember when Miguel Cabrera won the Triple Crown and won the MVP outside of the Sabre versus traditional stat debate with him and Mike Trout. One of the things that I noticed was the BBC picked up this, and they never pick up baseball stuff unless it's like Shohei Ohtani, but they picked it up because they're like, oh, Dominican player wins rare triple crown in American Baseball League. And like, they're reporting it like it was this big deal that a Dominican player was doing this in the American League. And I wonder if, like, I feel like American sports, we're just very used to foreign born players coming in and doing things right. NBA's got the Greek Freak. In hockey, obviously there's a lot of
Canadians, Russians,
like Swedish players coming in and doing. I mean, the N in NHL literally stood for Canada. Like, it was pretty much Canadian National Hockey League. So we're very used to it. And I thought with like soccer that other countries would be a little more used to that, just because there is so much back and forth. But I do think there are some places where it's still like, no, this is our national league. We want our national players to be the ones that are getting the headlines and that sort of stuff. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a cultural thing, I guess. And it's just interesting how that kind of all works out.
Yeah, I don't think it would be. I mean, you know, okay, there's issues with America, and we can be here for an hour and a half if we want to talk about those. But I don't think that would ever be a thing. I mean, look at someone like Sammy Sosa, who hit 60 plus home runs once. I mean, Barry Bonds is the all time leader. Okay, he's American. He's American.
All right.
Bad example. Sammy Sosa, maybe not so much. But yeah, we see Miguel Cabrera, Triple Crown. There hasn't been any reports of that, thankfully. So I don't think that'd be something that we would ever become issue. But yeah, it's just weird. You know, well, Japan is very, you know, all about their traditions and stuff. So I guess I kind of get it, but get him out. Don't let him hit a home run.
Yeah.
Be better.
Well, speaking of racism and America and baseball, Angel Hernandez's discrimination lawsuits has been dismissed against MLB for a second time. The courts have found no basis for his discrimination lawsuits because, well, he's just not a very good umpire. That's
everyone thinks he's horrible.
I can't imagine having that, like, the hit to my fragile ego when someone tells me something bad about myself is already like enough. It hurts me sometimes, right? I'm just imagining having a legal court document stating you are so bad at your job, you do not deserve these things that you say you deserve. it feels like it would just hurt so much, and I feel bad.
That's got to be a blow. Fans are one thing, you know. Fans are always going to tell you you suck. You know, the guy that thinks you just missed a ball call is going to tell you you suck. But yeah, when you get, you know, a judge in so many words saying no, yes, you're just terrible. Bang. It's got to sting a little deeper than the others.
Anyways, that's worth mentioning here quick. We had a nice segue to it. The last thing that was actual baseball news that I thought was worth discussing this week.
Speaking of umpires,
exactly, is he will not, if he gets demoted to AAA, which he won't because of the union, he won't have to worry about calling balls and strikes because robot umps will be behind the plate for AAA in 2022. So starting this season. And quick reminder, minor leaguers are not subject to MLBPA, which means that we will have a minor league season.
Thank goodness, because the last thing those minor league players need is another shortened or weird season.
Yes.
I can only imagine what that does to their development.
So that will be happening. And so there will be robot umps. I believe it's the same system, or, you know, a slightly improved, you know, behind the scenes improved system they had in the Atlantic League last year. And robot umps will be behind the plate for AAA. And every report seems to have mentioned that reminds us that MLB has an agreement from 2020 with the Major League Umpires Union if they wish to move it up to MLB at some point in the future. That has already been negotiated for in the umpire collective bargaining agreement. So that is, that's interesting that this is coming to AAA.
Yeah. I mean, by all accounts, you know, you said it was in the Atlantic League. I think they started in 2021 last year.
I think it was last year they were trying it the last couple of years here.
Yeah. So. By all accounts, it seems like it's a good system. I didn't really hear any. If there was major issues, I'm sure I would have heard about it. And if they do move it up to Major League Baseball, yeah, I don't know why you'd have a problem with it if you were the umpire union. It's not taking your job away. It's still gonna, you know, you're still gonna be there calling the balls and strikes. I don't know. I used to be hard against robo-umps. I think I'm just a little bit against robo-umps, but I'm kind of more and more like, yeah, this is a thing. It should happen, in my opinion. So let's see what happens in AAA and then go from there.
Yeah. I mean, so as I feel like we're required to mention two things at this point, Mike Trout for you, and me and Kuhan have been bonding over cricket recently. Cricket has an interesting system to determine if balls would have hit certain points. With the way it works, basically, imagine if the batter could block the plate with their leg, and if the ball doesn't, you know, go over the plate, they don't get out or whatever. They've got this thing called leg before wicket, and basically they've got a ball tracking system that tracks the trajectory of the ball and estimates if the player's leg had not gotten in the way, would have the ball traveled into basically the strike zone, into the wicket. And seeing that utilized was very interesting. And so you know, the system works in other sports. It's a little different. Obviously, we're talking about an imaginary 3D plane, but at the same time, in MLB, we don't need to predict where the ball is going, would have gone. We just, you know, it's there. That's where it went.
Like, where did it go? Right. Yeah.
Where did it actually go? And if it's struck by the bat, well, congrats, it's a strike. Like,
they don't have to worry about it, right? So they have cricket StatCast. All right,
basically,
the more you know, more you know.
But I guess the biggest thing with this news of it going to AAA is just I'm interested, as many teams have really prioritized pitch framing. If this is coming into AAA, suddenly AAA catchers don't have that feedback loop on how their pitch framing is doing. And so, to me, this signals that MLB is planning to have it up to the majors relatively soon. Otherwise, there would be teams that would not be happy that, well, you are hindering the development of our catchers, and we might need that for a couple more seasons. So we'll see how that goes. I feel bad for any pitch framing AAA catchers who thought they were going to make it on the merit of their being able to steal strikes, and now they can't practice it. But you know, it's one of those things.
Good thing that Jeff Mathis is in the major leagues and not in AAA. Because if he was, he'd be out of a job.
I am curious what robo umps would do to the catching position. Because I feel like we've swung to this point where offense is less emphasized at the position. It's never been super emphasized at the catching position, but people have accepted even less offense out of the catching position, especially with the DH, with the fact that if you can frame pitches, you're good. It'd be interesting if we get some more offense-oriented catchers.
Yeah, it's an interesting wrinkle because, like you said, framing is pretty much gone. And also teams don't steal a lot anymore. So, okay, if you're a catcher with a great arm, okay, well, then teams aren't going to run on you. And okay, if you it doesn't matter if you can frame or not. So there's another aspect of your game that's neutralized. Maybe they would put a little bit more emphasis now on catchers who like just have okay arms and like they can't frame. But it doesn't matter now, but you can hit, so okay.
Well, especially as they're like working on to prevent sign stealing, there have been talks of like electronic devices that like you can call the game. But I know a lot of games are called from the dugout now sometimes too. So even the game calling aspect.
I was going to say maybe now this will emphasize game calling, pitcher catcher relationship and that sort of thing. But yeah, if even that's being a little bit minimalized these days.
Well, I'm hoping for a resurgence in the run game. And if MLB is making any rule changes, they'll be to get the run game going. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I just think baseball is objectively more fun when there's more running.
Absolutely.
More stolen bases. So we'll see how that all plays out. That is our news for the week. Do you have anything else, Maz, that you wanted to talk about here?
No, not really. We're sitting here. I just can't help but to think, we're sitting here watching the Sunday night game, as you said. I wish it was the Sunday night baseball game.
I do too.
Hopefully we'll get there soon, but
hopefully,
especially because we only have a couple more weeks of football left. We got what, one more than the Super Bowl, and then it should be pitcher and catcher time. Fingers crossed, guys. Let's get there, please.
All right. So answering our trivia question from earlier in the segment, who said it ain't like football? You can't make up no trick plays. That was the most quotable of baseball managers, Yogi Berra. Yogi Berra said that. So I think it's amusing to me because there's a lot of trick plays in baseball when you think about it. Not quite there as many as football, but
I was going to maybe guess Yogi Berra, but I didn't think it was silly enough to be a Yogi Berra quote. You know, it's like, well, there is, like, so it's kind of wrong, but no, I get what he's saying. So yeah, it wasn't silly enough to be Yogi for me.
All right. Well, hey, here's the outro. Cue the outro quick, because it's just me and Maz here today. Thank you for listening to episode 57 of Our Baseball Weekly. My name is Lewis. I was joined today by Maz. I also am the executive producer of this podcast. Our wonderful podcast admin is Christine. Our editor is Naim. And our theme music was composed by Chuck Leese. So thank you all for listening. We'll be back next Monday with who, Maz? Who do we got next week again?
We're going to have big old Dan Zim coming in. Dan Szymborski, of course, the creator of the Zips projection system, which he just wrapped up this last week. So I'm excited to be joined by him. And I hope to see you all then. Hopefully you'll come back. If not, let us know what we can do better. Drop a comment on the Reddit. We still have the survey open for the listeners as well. Until then, I love you. Goodbye.